Hello and welcome again to TCB Podcast. This is episode 3. My name is Tim DeBlock, your host, aka Timmy, on crawfishboxes.com. Joining me is David Coleman, aka the Cyborg.
How's everybody doing?
And Brooks Parker, aka Subber 10.
Hey guys.
Wow, that's some really interesting catchphrases, guys. don't get too excited about the podcast.
I thought about doing the whammy from Anchorman, but I was like, eh, maybe not.
That would have been interesting. Hello. Either that, you can do a Barry White hello. All right. Before we get into the Astros talk, a little getting to know the host. What is your guys' favorite piece of sports memorabilia that you guys have?
Brooks, go right ahead.
You probably have a lot better, interesting ones than I.
Yeah, I do, but I don't. Like the most interesting one for me right now is one I just got. I just changed jobs, and my very nice coworkers, as a parting gift, gave me a little, it's like an 8x10 picture of all the Houston Astros uniforms throughout the years. And so, obviously, with the discussion on the site this week, it's something I've been referring to quite a bit, looking up at my wall. But it's really cool. It's got Minute Maid Park kind of watermarked in the background with the Astros logo in the center, and then all the different uniforms they've ever worn in a circle around the edges. And it's probably my favorite picture right now.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I've never been a guy to really collect a lot of stuff, but so probably my favorite one right now is just the baseball, actually, that Jordan Lyles threw me after his warm-ups when he was in Nashville a couple weeks ago.
Ooh, lucky you.
Yeah.
Did you get him to sign it or no?
No, I'm hoping maybe, possibly I will next week when he's back in town. That'd be cool if I do get a chance to do that.
Mine is actually nothing to do with baseball. When my grandmother passed away, I got a Charles Barkley signed golf ball. It is nice. It's very nice, especially with his exploits
phenomenal
as a golfer.
Golf swing.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely unique. And I've actually gone to the Braves games at Turner Field, and I've had like a couple golf balls in my pocket. I've always been chicken to try to get one of the players to actually sign the golf ball.
Sign a golf ball, yeah.
Yeah, yep. And our seats were right over their bullpen where they warm up. And actually, I saw Bud Norris walking through there one day. And then the year before, I'd seen Backy. But I was always too chicken to call down and try to get them to sign it and then throw it back up to me. I'd definitely like to get like someone like Bud Norris's autograph on a golf ball since he is a golfer. Probably my biggest would be Jim DeShays.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, just because he loves golf.
Not to get off too much of a tangent here, but I used to see Jim DeShays every now and then around the Woodlands at different restaurants or, you know, walking out of a store. And you never want to bother somebody like that when they're at their home and, you know, doing errands or something. But I always thought it's cool that, you know, you see somebody just doing their thing, you know, that is such a cool part of the Astros organization.
Yeah, I'm not one of those people that just walk up to celebrities and say, here, sign this for me.
I'm pretty sure celebrities don't like those kind of people. I mean, being in Nashville, I mean, I see the big Nashville stars. They come into the store that I work at sometimes, but I mean, they're just so chill. You realize that they're just people like us. They just get to do something and make a lot of money doing it.
I know I'm always really annoyed when people try to come up and get my autograph. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, I've always wondered if I did move to Houston and started throwing around that I write for the Crawfish Boxes, how much celebrity status I would have. I don't think I'd have very much, but you never know when you run it. Oh, yeah, I like reading that site, you know.
Yeah, it hadn't worked for me yet, but I keep trying.
Have you guys seen the Brandon Phillips, what he did? Some kid, Little League kid, invited him to his Little League game because he noticed Brandon Phillips saying that he was in the area, and Brandon Phillips showed up in the second inning.
I generally dislike the Reds just on principle, but I had to give him props for that because it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think after reading that, I became a Brandon Phillips fan for sure.
Nice. It's a good, nice thing to do. It's really cool when actually your fans are actually, or the guys that you are a fan of, are willing to actually come see you or, you know, interact with fans and not just kind of be sticking the muds and ignore fans.
Yeah, he's definitely a great ambassador for the game.
Yeah.
All right, so what's the biggest story from this last week? Is it still the Astros sale, or is there something else?
Considering that the teams have been playing like butt for the last week. It's definitely the sale.
They did get a series win this weekend, so
that's I guess that does factor into the week. But the previous 4 days just really was terrible, like awful. I can't say that enough. Awful.
Yeah, it's got to be the sale. I mean, this is really, as far as Astros fans are concerned, that's all you have.
Yeah, I think we're getting a lot more information coming out about the sale. We're learning tidbits, this and that, what's going to affect the sale, what's not, what kind of effect this is going to have on the organization, and we're going to see probably a lot of that over the next year. So since that's our biggest story, let's go ahead and get into that. Do you guys see any snags with completing the sale? We obviously have the EEOC issue, but it appears that he's been smoothing that over. He met with leaders from the – I'm drawing a blank here. The
NAACP?
Yes. I think is that the chapter for the Houston area?
Mm-hmm.
He met – I don't know if you guys saw this article, but he met with them to discuss the EEOC allegations. I don't know if I'm saying allegations. I mean, they still deny that they did any wrongdoing, but they've obviously, you know, they obviously came to a settlement.
Well, they are allegations. It was an investigation. They did have a case filed against them, and had to pay damages basically based on what they did. It's not a court case, so you can't say that they were convicted of anything. And the burden of proof, like Craig Calcaterra said on Hardball Talk this week, the burden of proof for those cases is much lower. But it's still, it's kind of skeevy. You hear these conversations where he's alleged to say things like, you know, we can't hire blacks because then we can't fire them. And you certainly don't want somebody in the 21st century, which, you know, this was 2001, he was supposed to have said this, to be saying that. But we don't know. And the fact that the fines were lowered is certainly a good thing. I think Crane is really wants this to work. And Bud Selig probably let Drayton know that, yeah, this is going to be okay. We'll work this out as long as he does this, this, and this. And I think he's starting to do that. But it could be a massive PR backlash for the Astros if the NAACP or any number of groups that would have been affected by this decide to boycott the Astros, to make a stink about it. It's a lot of negative publicity for the team.
I think that probably would have already started to surface, though. If they did have a problem, I think we already would have heard people coming out and saying things. I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, and Jim Crane said met with the chapter for Houston leaders of the NAACP, and apparently he's smooth either, but he reassured them, and they came out of the meeting impressed with him and, you know, a certain happiness with the issue. You know, he got to tell his side of the story to them.
And I agree. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I'm worried about it, but I worry about silly things that I shouldn't all the time. So the fact that I'm worried about it doesn't really mean much. I mean, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles got by with PETA protesting every game because of Michael Vick. So I think the Astros could get by without taking that much of a hit if the rest of the country doesn't think this is that big of an issue. And it sounds like they're kind of doing the kind of damage control to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think it probably would have been a much bigger stink already if it was actually going to turn into a problem. Because, I mean, it would be getting, you know, headlines on ESPN like nonstop if there's actual, you know, people causing a stink over it. So I don't see a hang up with it.
Well,
it's probably going to be addressed, but when they're actually trying to confirm it. But I don't see it being a problem preventing the sale.
Well, my point is that if he's getting approved by owners who, let's face it, they all have their own skeletons in the closet. So I don't think that's going to deter them from approving Jim Crane. If anything, it might be the financial reasons of the deal.
Yeah, and the financial reasons, certainly the owners like the fact that the price tag is big. They don't like the debt, probably, but there's probably about half the owners that have that kind of debt. You know, looking through the Forbes evaluations to see where the Astros ranked on their debt-to-value ratio, there were quite a few in the 50, 60, 70% debt ratios that is just crazy to think about.
Are you saying the other owners were?
Yeah, the other owners. Okay, you know, okay. There's a lot of owners that carry quite a bit of debt. So, you know, are they in the position of, you know, the pot calling the kettle black kind of thing?
Right. And there's another article I read where Jim Crane is expected to make $1 billion by the end of 2013, I believe. So he could probably carry some of that debt as long as he's got a good outlook as far as his other business ventures.
Well, and he's a businessman. I mean, he's coming into a company. He's has the credit to finance it. He's not going to plunk down all of his capital right away. I'm sure he's pretty well bankrolled, but a lot of that may be in stock options and the different companies he's involved in. He's already said in the press conference he's not giving up his other interests just to run the Astros. So I think it will be very interesting to see how his financial situation impacts the team, but I don't think we're going to get a sense of that for 2 or 3 more years.
Yeah, and being that everybody operates under those sort of debt anyway, especially with a lot of his ventures and being one of his companies is only like 3 years old, and they're already making expected to make $500 million this year. So I don't see how it's going to be a concern, just because he is such a great businessman anyway. So he should probably be able to turn at least the Astros around in several years.
Do you guys see the payroll increasing?
Not early on, no. Maybe eventually, but I don't think we'll see like the $115 million payroll for several years.
I think he'll be smart about it. I think he's got the money to pay that much if he needs to, but ultimately I think that he's going to run the team fiscally soundly. He's going to set a budget. He's going to, you know, kind of like the Astros did this year. They're not cutting it back to 50 or 60 million, which they could have easily done, you know, with a couple moves and not signing some guys, plugging in some minor league depth into the big league team. And they didn't. You know, they stuck to that $70 to $80 million range, which is, I think, pretty much the bottom of what a team in this market should be spending. So you've got that to consider. I think Crane will spend more if we've got a team that's ready to contend and he's adding a piece to the puzzle, not trying to find a cornerstone through free agency.
Yeah, I really think you'll kind of see the payroll go as the team goes. As the team roster actually gets better, our winning record starts to get better, I think we'll slowly start to see payroll increase, because this is going to be a factor of him making more money based off ticket sales. And with ticket sales going up, as the team gets better, he'll just reinvest it into the payroll.
Well, I think he could actually increase it, because Drayton actually decreased it this year, or at least mm-hmm. we're speculating here, because he wanted to sell the team. So I could actually see them increase in payroll for next year.
But what does that mean? You know, we say increasing payroll. Does that mean that they're going out and signing another $10 million pitcher? Does that mean, I mean, who's out there that they could go out and sign and increase payroll significantly and have it impact the team? That's really the reason I don't see it increasing substantially in the near future, because I don't think there's one fix. You know, there's that one guy they can go out, sign, and make a big impact in next year or the year after.
Exactly. We're just not that, you know, one piece away where we have to just increase the payroll a little bit to be able to sign the guy. We have too many problems on the roster and too many holes that you'd have to increase the payroll, you know, 30, 40, 50 million probably to be able to fix this team. And he's not going to do that early on.
Well, but I don't think the Astros have to save money year to year. I think they can operate with a higher payroll and still rebuild and still be putting that money into scouting development, whatever. So I still think it increases. I haven't looked at the free agents. I typically don't do that until the off season.
Yeah.
But I could see it increasing just because he wants to show the fans that he is committing to a winning team. And to do that, he's going to have to spend some money. If he doesn't, he's going to start hearing it from the fans, which he may not care about at all, but that's going to show up in the tickets. The tickets being sold.
I see him increasing in those areas like scouting and development, but I don't see him, you know, bringing in a big time free agent. Like as far as the major league payroll, I don't see any significant difference. But yeah, I think he'll start spending more, like in like as far as like the international free agent market and stuff like that. That I can actually see.
Well, and it's the difference in what the Rays do and what the Boston Red Sox do. You know, the between what the Astros have done in the past. The Red Sox went out, they signed Adrian Beltre to a reasonable contract on a one-year deal, plugged him into their team. The Rays went out and got Johnny Damon and Manny Ramirez before the season. Hadn't really worked out for them, but they were able to spend that money on short deals that made sense, increase the payroll, you know, hopefully to get their team more competitive. And I think that if he does increase the payroll, those are the kind of deals that we may be more likely to be able to do. You know, signing, you know, even signing Beltre to a 2 or 3 year deal now when he was on the market this last winter, things like that to improve the competitiveness of the team without affecting the future growth of prospects.
But at the same time, because those guys are going to go to those type of teams for short deals because they think they can win a championship with those teams. Nobody's going to come to the Astros thinking they can win a championship on a short deal.
Right, but, you know, there's still guys out there that sign short deals that are good quality players in that, you know, middle range. Did Adam Dunn sign with the White Sox because he thinks they could win a championship?
True fact. Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, wasn't he one of the last free agents to sign?
Yeah, he typically is because teams, you know what they're getting with him. And it's hard to, you know, you want to fool yourself that you're spending money on somebody that could get better or, you know, could impact your team in a different way. And you, know, you just don't see that with Adam Dunn necessarily.
Yeah. But isn't that essentially what Ed Wade has been trying to do with signings like Pedro Feliz and Bill Hall? And we've complained about those type of signings after the fact.
Well, I think some of those work out and some of them don't. Pedro Feliz, Kaz Matsui, Bill Hall didn't work out. Brett Myers did. If you go out and find that Kelly Johnson, that could work out.
Well, and okay, so let's assume that we run with Tim's theory that he's going to come in and raise the payroll because the team can support it. Maybe what changes is when we're going after Bill Hall, well, when we were going after Orlando Hudson instead of Bill Hall, and he chose us or the Padres, well, those deals were probably pretty similar. The Astros had a price that they were going to pay him. That's what they offered him, and he chose the Padres deal. Well, if Crane is going to let him raise the payroll, and they say, yeah, you know, this is the guy we want, he says, go get him, and we sign him for, you know, $3 or $4 million over that on still a 1 or 2 year deal, does that make sense? Does it make sense to overpay a little bit to get a guy in because he doesn't want to sign with a bad team? If it's a guy that's going to help your team and fill a hole that you have, like at second base this year.
Well, I think you could also try to sign those type A free agents to, well, or someone that might project to be a type free agent the next year and sign them to try and get some more draft picks, which would help with rebuilding the farm system. Now, that might be a little bit tricky, but the Astros do have a protected pick, and it looks like they're going to have a protected pick next year.
Yeah, and I'd be okay with that. Depending on who it is, as long as he's not blocking a prospect. We don't have any second base prospects that are quite ready. So, I mean, if that, like, for instance, this year, you know, signing Orlando Hudson for a few years and paying him a little bit extra, yeah, I would have been okay with that.
Well, let's be honest. There's quite a few people on the roster right now that are blocking prospects coming up, even though they're not signed a big contract. So this isn't a team loaded down with talent that we're talking about here.
All right. Well, what kind of influence do you guys think Jim Crane will have? We have reports that he will be in the draft room during the draft. And, I mean, what kind of influence do you think he will have on the draft? Or does he not do anything? Just sits there and watches?
I think that's, for the most part, kind of what he's going to do, just kind of get a feel for the process. Now, I do think his presence is going to have a slight impact because I'm sure Ed Wade, Bobby Heck, all of them, they're going to kind of get a feel for him the next 2 weeks on what kind of guys he's going to want to sign or draft at least. And so just his presence is probably going to have some sort of influence. I don't think it's going to be a huge influence, but I think he might have a little bit.
Yeah, and it's tough to say what he's going to do, you know, because this is his first draft. Is he sitting in because he wants to know how it works and see how the draft room functions? Is he sitting in to help evaluate Bobby Heck in the scouting department to see where he needs to spend more money there? Is he doing it because he's generally going to provide input on players? Is it because the input he wants to have is not scouting-wise? Yeah, I like this guy's fastball. No, he's not a control pitcher. That kind of thing. Or is it, this guy's got some character concerns. That's not the organization we want to be. Let's go in a different way.
But is he even going to have basically the ability to make those kind of comments? Because, I mean, at this point, it's still Drayton's team until he gets approval. So is Major League Baseball even going to allow him to have that kind of influence?
Well, I mean, he's going to have as much influence as Drayton lets him. I mean, before they sign over the team, if Drayton lets him in the room and lets him say what he wants to say, then, you know, it's his future employee's job to listen to him or not. Major League Baseball is not going to stop him from that. It's Drayton's job to stop him from that.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, I think if they're really discussing a prospect that it's 50-50 in the room, I think he could have some influence on which way they go.
I think he might be a tiebreaker, but I still think his influence is going to be a little bit kind of towards more like a slight feel for him. I think they're going to kind of have a feel for what he's going to look for. Is he going to look for the high upside high school pick or more of a close, almost ready college guy?
Do you guys think he takes an MSU player? Or he tells them to, or tries to sway them to take an MSU player?
In the later rounds, if a guy's available and Bobby Heck feels like there is potential that he could be helpful, I think he kind of tries to sway them. But looking at their roster, I'm not real sure if any of those guys are even considered draftable guys.
Oh, really?
Not well, bad. The one guy is this Nick DiBiase, the first baseman who's hit 9 home runs and 21 doubles and is hitting 460, 554, and 708 on the year. He's got a pretty legitimate bat, and he's got a little bit of pedigree. He was at Rice, seems to have transferred there after 2 seasons, and, you know, is kind of hit now that he's at Division II. Does that mean that he can hit at the next level? They're playing with those bats. So the fact that he's showing that kind of power with the new bats is really impressive to me.
Yeah, that's the only guy that I was able to kind of really think so with him. And I was comparing the two, his past 2 seasons, his power's dropped off a little bit, but that's partly because of the new bats. But I mean, he's the only one that I can possibly see and have potential to be drafted. Definitely not any pitchers, but yeah, I mean, that's the only guy is that DiBiase guy.
Well, and he's a senior, and he's a first baseman. You're not talking a lot of flexibility there. He's old, and he doesn't play position, so he's going to be drafted pretty far down if he does get picked.
Yeah, because when you're looking at Division II guys, you kind of really, you're looking for the JD Martinez type. You know, the guy who's, he is a junior, he hits for an extremely high average, and yeah, DiBiase does that, but he's a senior. And so you would have to think that if he was going to get drafted, it would definitely have been last year.
Well, but that's how players fall to the cracks, though. Astros don't have a plethora of first baseman prospects.
That's true, but they also don't necessarily need an old first base prospect either. And I keep saying that because, you know, older guys, the Astros got into a rut of signing these guys that are 22, 23 when they're coming out. So by the time they get to even high A, they're 24 or 25. And then what do you do with them? You know, they signed Mark Ori and Ole Sheldon. And the list goes on and on from the middle part of this decade of these first basemen that they signed, did fairly well, but then just kind of priced themselves out of being a prospect because they got too old and couldn't hit at the higher levels. So yeah, I think taking a flyer on this guy wouldn't be bad. And I think this is kind of the case that maybe Crane could point them in this direction. But the other thing to think about is we're talking about somebody scouting here in the draft. And a lot of times those late picks are somebody's favorite. And so maybe Crane could say, I like this guy, pick him in the 42nd round.
Yeah, he seems to go to quite a few of these games. So he's his own scout. And he's the new boss, too. So he... He could be the overriding factor there.
But if this guy's a more legitimate prospect, you may see somebody like Kansas City or St. Louis, you know, somebody that's a little closer to the area that might have a scout that's you know, in that area and is able to see this kid a couple times more than the Astros, who I don't know what their scouting makeup is, but I can't imagine that they've got somebody that'll just hang around Kansas and Missouri and can get to, you know, a Division II game like this very often.
Yeah, when you're looking at a senior guy at a Division II school, you almost think this is the kind of guy that's probably going to get a non-drafted free agent type contract instead of being a late round pick, just because you saw several guys, high school guys, that really in those last 10 rounds, a lot of them are going to be your draft and monitor type guys. Guys that are high school guys, and you kind of see how they do in those summer leagues, and if you just getting a more chance to watch them, and if you really like them, then you try to sign them away from their college commitments. But with this, you kind of see more of a guy that might get a non-drafted free agent. Kind of like, I can't even remember the guy's name, but he signed last year, played in Greenville, and they actually moved up for the playoffs to Tri-City. I can't remember his name, but he was a first baseman last year as well.
All right, well, let's move away from the draft. Let's move towards the trade deadline. What kind of effect do you guys think Jim Crane, because by then, if everything goes smoothly, it appears he will be the new owner. Are we selling everything, keeping everything, dropping Carlos Lee? What are we doing?
Well, obviously, I think Hunter Pence goes to the Phillies, so.
Yeah, there was an article out last night. Apparently, they're interested.
It's the only team the Astros can trade with. I mean,
yeah. And the Rockies. And the Rockies.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Well, I've looked at that before. I mean, they certainly do spend quite a bit of time trading with the Phillies or dealing with the Phillies. But Wade actually does go out and do deals with other teams, surprisingly. I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think that's one thing that kind of, you know, it's the butt end of a joke.
Yeah, it is. It's the easy joke. It was just, it's there because it's Hunter Pence and it's the Phillies. I'm not convinced that the Phillies farm system is restocked enough to get Hunter Pence on a fair deal at this point. I was looking at Jonathan Singleton earlier, who we kind of went crazy about when he was mentioned in the Oswalt trade. He's not hitting this year. You know, his average is okay, but he's not getting on base. He's striking out a ton, and he doesn't have power. So, you know, that would have been really disappointing to put somebody, you know, and he's a young kid and all that, blah, blah, blah.
Did he move up a level or something? Or?
Yeah, he moved up a level, and he's just not hitting. So maybe he's learning. He's 19, you know, he has to learn the ropes, but that, you know, and that's a player that was really highly regarded and now is struggling. Do you make a deal around Hunter Pence, around that guy, especially when we have Brett Wallace now? I just don't see the Astros making that particular move. I am okay. I've said in the past, I'm fine with them trading away Hunter Pence when his value's high, which is right now.
And I'm all right with it if they get the right package in return. I really don't think the Phillies are going to be an option right now anymore since they signed Podsednik today. But I actually think really the guys that you're going to see get moved are going to be either Wandy or Brad Myers or both, depending on what we're able to get back as far as major league ready pitchers, or if we are able to.
The qualification I want is there someone ready to step in at the major league level for these players? Hunter Pence, I think we've got you got Brian Bogusevic who could step in. You could move maybe Clint Barnes or Bill Hall. I think there's not the best options, but you have Tommy Manzella still down there. It looks like he's doing all right.
Whoa. You're forgetting the guy that would get a chance if Hunter Pence was traded. My man, J.D. Martinez.
Does he, though? I don't know if he gets a chance.
Yeah, I don't.
He's proven not to be that great in right field because of his, you know, he's not that mobile.
The
Astros, he's been playing primarily left field.
The Astros stuck Lance Berkman out there in right field.
They also had him playing in center field, which I don't.
Exactly.
You know, two wrongs don't make a right.
But Bourne can cover a little more ground. He can make up for it. I'm just saying, you know, if we're looking at ways that they can fill the roster once Hunter Pence is traded, that's a way. And that's a way that he keep people excited.
I'd rather have Martinez do another year next year and then replace Carlos Lee the year after that.
He's at AAA before we brought him up. But the thing I wanted to talk about, too, with Pence is, you know, I think it's more probable that the pitchers get traded. But, you know, the people talking, I think it was Ken Rosenthal that mentioned either this week or last week that Pence may be headed towards, you know, $10 million-plus deal in in arbitration. And are the Astros prepared to pay that? Would it be smart for the Astros to pay that, knowing that they haven't signed him to a long-term deal? And I don't think it's smart for them to sign him to a long-term deal after the season because he's getting older and he's not going to be here when the team's ready to contend. So what do they do with him? When do they trade him? Do they trade him this winter? Do they trade him now? When is he going to be at his most valuable?
But would it be, at the same time, would it be smart for Jim Crane to trade the most popular player on the roster after he first takes over?
Well, it's going to sting a lot less when he first takes over than if he's waiting a couple of years and then does it. You know, he's got some goodwill right now and can kind of weather that storm because he's new. He does it in a couple of years. That's a whole different story.
I think a lot of fans, too, recognize that this team needs to rebuild, and trading some of their players like a Hunter Pence might be okay.
I see it 50-50. I definitely see some fans getting really pissed off and turned off by Jim Crane. Mm-hmm. So I'm really not sure on that one. That's a very sticky situation that he's going to have a big decision in front of him.
Well, and, you know, the Astros went through this in the past, too, with Glenn Davis when they traded him to the Orioles. And, you know, they bet right on that, and they got out right before he kind of fell off as a player. And they got a pretty good package of prospects in return. So I don't think it's unprecedented that the Astros make a move for, you know, their high-profile face-of-the-franchise guy. I'm still not sure that Pence is actually going to get traded. But it is an interesting question that, you know, should the Astros trade him? Is his value going to be any higher than it is right now, basically?
I think he has another career year. We've seen the consistency. I think one of these years, in the next 4 or 5 years, he's going to just go nuts for 1 year, and that's going to be his career. So I don't think he's had his career year yet.
So do you trade him next year at the trade deadline when he's in the middle of that next career year?
Yes.
Yeah, you could very well. And who's to say it could be another 3 or 4 years before he has a career year?
But then, I mean, if you trade him next year, does the team give you anything for him since he'd be heading into free agency?
I think you kind of try to get him on a long-term deal within the next year or two. Where he is going to be a little bit more attractive to a team who's trying to trade for him, because he won't necessarily be a free agent for another few years. And you get him, you definitely trade him during that hot streak, and let somebody like JD Martinez get established on the major league level, where maybe he can come in and be that next fan favorite.
And see, I think that Crane takes a bigger hit if he signs Pence to a long term contract and then turns around and trades him. You know, even if it's within the next two and a half years. I think that I'm not sure how willing he would be to commit money to a player that he hasn't gotten the full measure of as an owner. And I don't know that he's going to have that necessarily by this winter, you know? I don't know. I'm skeptical, but I'm obviously in the minority. So I think it is an interesting discussion, though.
It really is. I really sound like I'm more towards keeping him, but I'm really straddling the fence on it. I'm kind of 50-50 still. I'm really not sure what to do with that.
Well, and they could just let him go and take a draft pick.
Does he get the draft pick, though? I mean, that's a – I don't think he's – is he a type A even? And that's – you know, that formula is so weird right now.
Yeah,
because he's good, but he's not great, you know?
Well, I think he's consistent. I think he's got to be at least a type B. He's definitely above average. He's got all the counting stats that they like when constructing those, you know, whether assigning those type A or type B free agents. So
do they group him in as a right fielder, though, or do they group him in as an outfielder?
Well, I don't know. Do they do all outfielders, or do they just do right fielders, center fielders?
I don't know either. I know I've seen articles that try to, you know, reverse engineer that formula, and my eyes glaze over because it's so technical.
I think it is all outfielders are grouped together, because you don't see a lot of your speedy center fielders who get type A free agency because they don't have the big home run numbers or anything like that, because they're grouped in all together. I think I saw an article that mentioned that.
What? I think if you're going to take into account his defense, I don't know if they're taking into account defense, but if they do, that's certainly a plus for him.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know that they do, but I could be wrong. And I bring that up only because it's kind of scary that he could be grouped in with some left fielders who have actual power. And not that Hunter doesn't, but, you know, 25 homers, he's been consistent in that. It's different than somebody who can hit 30 or 40 in left field, but play, you know, less defense, but that doesn't matter kind of thing.
All right, so that brings up, well, because since we're kind of not sure on whether he's going to be a type A free agent, what about with Michael Bourne? Do we go ahead and trade him away and just put Hunter Pence back in center field? We know he's not good there, but he started off in Houston playing there.
No. I have been checking the comments, but I am totally against trading Michael Bourne simply because of the fact there's no one that's going to replace him. And the Astros aren't going to get the value in return of what he would provide by the Astros keeping him.
We know we're not going to get anything back if he goes away in free agency in a few years.
But I also think he's young enough that we can compete in 5 years.
Okay.
He'll still be around and a center fielder. I also, it's also the history of the Astros. Let's trade our center fielder, and then we have Lance Berkman and Craig Biggio playing out there. I don't like seeing that. And talking about developing pitchers, you're going to stick someone inferior out there to Bourne in center field.
Well, yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that Bourne is more valuable to the Astros right now than he would be to a team trading for him with his skill set. You've seen the deals for center fielders that profile like him, the Kenny Loftons, the Juan Pierres, people like that, that they just don't bring the value in return that you would expect from somebody that's so brilliant defensively, is such a, you know, sublime base runner, that his skill set does not translate to getting ideal prospects back. And his value is much higher to the team right now because of all the reasons you just said. Now, I would be wary of signing him to a long-term contract too, because his defense right now is great, but his defense in 3 years may not be as good because he may slow down, he may blow out his knee. You just never know. And if something like that happens, then you got a guy that's playing on the corners in the outfield because he doesn't have the speed, he's not a great hitter, you know, his stealing has gone down. What do you do with that player that's locked into a contract for the next 2 or 3 years?
So do you trade him in a year or two? As he starts to possibly decline, maybe?
I don't trade him at all. I let him walk.
Let him walk? Okay.
Yeah.
You let him walk.
Somebody's going to give him a deal like they gave Juan Pierre when he left. With the Dodgers, gave him a 4-year, $40 million contract. And I bet somebody gives Bourne something like that when he hits free agency. And I don't think he's worth it.
I don't know. I mean,
as good as he is, I don't think you can pay him $10 million for 4 years when he's 30.
No, definitely. No, definitely not. No. The other, you know, and the other thing is part of the lineup. He's not the best leadoff hitter, but he is. I'd actually say he's an average leadoff hitter.
Yeah, he gets on base enough that makes his base running abilities, it highlights them, so that he becomes a better leadoff hitter because of that. He may not be the ideal leadoff hitter that we'd want, who has the 400 on-base percentage, yada, yada, yada. But he can affect a game because of the way he runs the bases, and that's important.
Yeah, and the other thing is, who are you going to plug in place of Bourne? Looking at our lineup right now, if Bourne's gone, is Bourgeois, who it took him 36 at plate appearances this year to get his first walk. I mean, Bourne does strike out, but he is one of the players that walks more on this. Like, he's one of the players that will actually take a walk on this team.
And is Bourgeois going to do this well when he's a little more exposed with more playing time too?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But other than those two, who else leads off?
Well, you know, you wait 2 years and Austin Waits is ready.
Well, we're talking now. I haven't seen anything. I know these toolsy center fielders.
Okay, so Jay Austin. So, you know, somebody, the Astros have so many.
Way to make it worse.
You know?
I'm telling you, we're going to have Pence out there or JD Martinez or.
Hey, Bogus they'll move your boy Jose Altuve out there to center field and he can play and lead off.
He'd look like
I'd like him as a leader spot. I'd like him there.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind Altuve. I kind of see him as a David Eckstein. He actually compares interesting to David Eckstein. I was looking at that.
I just like him as David Eckstein because they're both scrappy. And the only reason you think he's scrappy is because he's under 5'5 or whatever.
He says he's a legit 5'6. So.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was. I think it was either David Eckstein had a little more power on base a little bit more, or it was the other way around. I think it is the other way around. I think Altuve had a little bit more power, but Eckstein was able to get on base a little bit more.
Guarantee if Altuve makes the major leagues, the Astros broadcasters will wear out the word scrappy. It will have to be retired because they use it so much.
Are we talking TV or radio?
Both combined. I think it'll just be that's all they'll talk about when he's up there. How scrappy he is. Oh, he's just a gamer. This guy just loves baseball.
Oh, I won't care as long as he's hitting.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to disparage your man crush there, Tim.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, because I read Fire Joe Morgan back in the day, and they just ripped. Well, and you know what? They didn't really hate David Eckstein. It was the fact that the writers were using the gritty scrap tags all the time. So it's not going to bother me as long as he's coming up and producing. He's producing in the minors and, you know, not getting any love right now, but.
Certainly, Pedroia kind of killed that phenomenon because I don't really hear many people talk about him being scrappy. You know, they do throw around the whole baseball player thing, but he's a good player, and that's just what they say about him. He's a good player.
He's got the laser show.
Yeah, that's the best quote ever. I think all the time.
Well, but think about it. We've already got a scrappy, gritty, hard-nosed, to the ground player in Hunter Penn, so we don't hear it all the time with him. Of course. I do get the away broadcast on MLB.com, and I hear that all the time. You know, they talk about his high socks, his heart, he comes to play every day, yada, 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 which, it's not a bad thing, but it just gets old time after time. And speaking of that, what do you guys think of Praying Mantis for Hunter Pence? The Braves announcers use that to describe his awkward or unorthodox swing and just the way he plays.
I see where they would get that from. I don't like it, but I can see where they associate the two.
Okay, if you don't like Praying Mantis, what nickname would you give him? Because we haven't given Hunter Pence. We gave one to Castro last year, but we haven't given Hunter Pence and some of the other players their nicknames.
Don't know.
Put us on Maybe we should ask him on get. Twitter what his nickname should be. Because, you know, Berkman christened himself the Big Puma. And that was the best nickname of the last 10 years, I think. Or it's at least up there.
Yeah, nicknames have kind of gone away.
Yeah.
Or at least all the good ones have. We've got A-Rod, and we've got A-Rod on our team now.
I like El Hombre for Pujols. He's kind of gone through a couple of them. But that's
I like Buffalo.
Yeah. Oh, Carlos.
I like him. But I like the nickname.
I think Al Caballo is a good name.
It really
is.
Yeah,
it is. It is.
Then you got Speed for Bourne.
Uh huh.
What else do we have?
Brick Wallace is the best.
I don't think it's caught on, but it's certainly something in our on our website.
Yeah.
Was it Al Fila who made the photoshopped Brick from the Hangover Anchorman with Brett Wallace's face? I think it was Al who did that.
No, I did that. That was Al Fila's Twitter. He's got a Twitter of that same photograph that I took the head from. But no, I put it on Anchorman's.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I put that together. I also did the horse one with El Caballo. Half horse. Yeah, yep. I took a Photoshop this last semester in college, so I've been trying to use it as much as I can. And when I've also put Carlos Lee's head on Michael Bourne's body.
Yeah.
Because that's what he thinks. That's what he thinks. When he looks in the mirror, that's what he sees.
Well, and, you know, I've been trying to start the shark nickname for Melanson. Has that been catching on? I haven't really seen or heard on the broadcasts. We need to get that nickname through because it's Mark the Shark is pretty cool for a closer.
It's been sticking pretty good in the comments. I think it has.
Yeah. It's definitely taking the comments. Where's the shark come from? I was thinking about that last night, and I don't get that connection.
Because of his name. I mean, that's the whole reason I use it. Mark the Shark, and you know, you want your closer to be like a shark. You know, steely eyed, dead inside, shark.
Arr.
But I don't get
sound like a pirate.
How do you get? Oh, you're rhyming. Okay.
Yeah.
I was still not getting that one either.
Mark the Shark. See, they can chant. Fans can chant when he runs in from the bullpen.
The
Shark.
Well, you can just play the Jaws music when he comes in. I don't know what
exactly.
He's got right now. Yeah, what does he have right now?
I don't know.
Get footer on it.
Yeah, we need to find out. What is Mark Melanson's entrance music?
David, you haven't been to any games this year?
I have not. I've been so busy.
Oh, man.
This is the first weekend I've had 2 days off. Well, it's the first time I've had 2 days off in a row in like a month and a half. So.
Oh, okay. Well, if anyone listening to the podcast has been to a game and knows what they play for him when he comes in, send it to thecrawfishboxes@gmail.com. Speaking of which, did you get any mail this week?
Unfortunately, no. But... if anyone does have any questions, we'll be glad to answer them on the podcast, so please send them in.
Yep.
Maybe we should start tagging that at the beginning of the podcast, so if people don't get to the end, they make sure they hear
turn
the,
us off
part.
After 5
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah,
you might have a point there. Of course, then we're just getting emails about how much we suck.
Well, let's do something.
Yeah, that's true.
One email is better than no emails.
Yeah, that email account is not getting used at all. All right, what about the new uniforms? That's been a pretty big topic of discussion. What are your guys' ideas for the uniforms? Are we keeping them the same, changing them? It seems like a lot of people want to change them and go back to the old uniforms with the orange and blue color scheme and the H with the star on it.
I like the blue and orange with the H and the star, but I don't know. I also like I'm in the minority when it comes to the red jerseys. I do like the red jerseys, but I'm in the minority with that. So I couldn't care less.
The red jerseys are solid, but I just when I see them on the field, they're not distinctive to me. You know, I don't see those red jerseys. If a player's got his back to me, I don't see him and think that's an Astro. Whereas, you know, you go with the rainbow jerseys, you know, that color scheme, even, you know, changing it up and making it new and hip or whatever they'd have to do to sell the marketing team on it, and it would be more distinctive. And you know, it's a personal preference. I liked those uniforms. That's always been kind of my favorite Astros uniform is those, you know, the 86 through 90 uniform, that kind of area. Go ahead.
I didn't like the uniforms that had the rainbows going across their chest, but I liked the throwbacks one that they were wearing with the rainbows on like their shoulders.
Yes, and that's the ones I'm thinking of. You know, the ones that when Jeff Bagwell was a rookie, the ones he wore then, that I think they wore as a throwback last year, towards the end of the season. Yeah.
Did you guys happen to catch the Red Sox Cubs game last night? They were using the 1918 throwback jerseys.
Oh. Were they all baggy and everything?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, they had colors on them.
Yeah. I saw the highlights from it.
Did you? Yeah, when I need.
Marlon Byrd got hit in the face with a fastball.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna turn on the game last night, but thanks to MLB.com's blackout restrictions, I was unable to catch that out, and I vented my frustration on Twitter to @MLB.
I saw that one.
Yeah, blackouts are so stupid. I mean, I can understand in your area, but I don't know why Fox gets to black out a whole bunch of games from 4:05 to 7:05 on Saturday, especially the Astro games that happen to get into that time frame. I don't get to see them on that Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, if you want your new owner to spend $92 million for his RSN, he's not going to get that if they don't black out games online, because the networks aren't going to pay to broadcast a game that people can see online. And baseball, you know, for all baseball does, for all baseball is ahead in technology and is, you know, cutting edge, blah, 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 with the MLB AM. It does a great job. I love game day. Don't get me wrong on that. They're really kind of behind the times on how digital media is, and the blackout restrictions bug me to no end.
Well, I think as far as the MLB TV, they were way ahead of the other sports. But, yeah, the blackout restrictions are just absolutely ridiculous. And I think if you live in the middle of the country and you're a Houston Astros fan, I think you get blacked out pretty bad, even though you might not necessarily be in the area that they show it on TV.
Yeah, well, even you don't have to live in the country. Here. Yeah, you don't have to live just in the middle of the country and not in the Astros area. It's, you know, you live around the Houston area and you can't always get the game on your TV, or you need to watch it in a different way. It helps to be able to watch it mobily. That's all I'm asking for, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely true. The other thing is that I think, who was it? I think it was Clack in today's game thread said that it wasn't on one channel, or they had Ranger games showing on both the primary and alternate channels.
Yeah, and you know, Rangers. I've noticed that this year a couple times. Fox Sports Southwest is really pushing the Rangers in a lot of the Astros markets. And we talked about that when it was going to happen. When I talked to the Fox Sports Southwest executives when the Astros were doing this whole deal, that's what they said that the plan was going to be, was to start pushing the Rangers because that's who they have the broadcast rights to. And the Astros can't do squat about it.
Yeah, but why would you put it on two different channels? You're just pushing away viewers. People aren't, you know, Astro fans, if you're going to put, you know, just to tick off the Astros, Astro fans are just not going to watch your TV station.
I guess their theory is that there's going to be enough people that watch it because of the Rangers that if they beat them over the head with it enough, and plus, I mean, they're kind of getting paid already, so it's not the ratings. You know, they're not getting paid based on ratings for baseball games. They're getting paid because it's playing in a baseball game. I could be wrong on that. I don't know the business of television, sports, and
I think advertising would make a difference. Depending on how many people are watching your channel, if you have less people, they're not going to pay as much for advertising.
Yeah, but if it's a regional campaign, you know, if it's all academy ads and stuff like that, that's going to run anyway, then it doesn't matter whether it's the Rangers or the Astros playing for them. As long as it's playing in Texas and it may get to people that they, you know, buy their products, they could care less.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I don't know enough about that either. We were on uniforms before we got off on this blackout restriction tangent. I came in, you know, I started watching the Astros when they were in the yellow, gray, blue, gold uniforms, which I actually, you know, I like. I like those rainbow uniforms too, but I like the new ones, especially because they match the same colors as the Carolina Gamecocks, which is the college I go to. So, my game room is colored in Astros/Gamecock colors, so I don't know what happens if the Astros go back to the orange and blue, because orange is actually down here. Clemson is their biggest rival.
Yeah.
Orange and purple are bad colors. So if I have orange and blue, which could be confused for purple, you know, I might get in trouble a little bit around here, especially my father-in-law.
Well, and, you know, they don't have to make the orange be the highlight either. I think they could stick with the navy blue and still have really good-looking uniforms. And, you know, still use the brick red. Enough people like the brick red, I think they could use that. Still use that as the Sunday jersey even. But there's ways to incorporate those colors to make it seem like a throwback-type uniform, but advancing it on, making it its own style. And the example I gave was the Rockets. I really like what the Rockets did with their latest redesign. They're smart uniforms. I think the logo is neat. It pops. It's not the old logo, and you know, it's not the old colors or uniforms, but it works a lot better than the uniforms they had before. And the pinstripes are just so dopey. I don't know.
I like to get rid of the pinstripes.
I've never been bothered by the pinstripes.
We're not the Yankees.
Yeah, it just looks, I don't know. Like I say, there's the biggest problem I have with these uniforms is they're not distinctive enough. You know, there's too many other teams that they could look like. And I know the Astros did it because of that exact same reason, because all these teams are seeing these marketing people say, these are the colors that sell. This is what you need to do. People like this. People will buy this. People will wear this.
Yeah, within our own division, we've got the Reds and the Cardinals who both wear red.
Yeah, that is a problem.
And okay, let's try to name all the red teams. There's the Diamondbacks, Red Sox,
The Reds.
I've already said the Reds.
That's an obvious.
Oh, okay. We're just not naming all the teams.
No, we're naming all the teams. Where have you been?
I don't know.
The Indians have some red. They don't wear a lot of red, but they have some red.
Do the Braves wear solid red?
Well, yeah, they wear. But
yeah, they do.
Yeah, they got the red and the gray.
Yeah,
would be the same one. I think that would be it.
The Nationals have red in their color. Their uniforms aren't totally red.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the same with the Twins. The Twins have the blue red and the gray and the white.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's still a lot of teams. I think red's the most used color in the major leagues.
And yet the main two ones really are in the same division as us, with the Reds and Cardinals.
Well, the Reds are named after the
color. But if they went back to something that highlighted the navy blue more than the orange, you know, I think that that would be distinctive.
What about a new color? Why don't we just go with green?
Fuchsia.
Or yellow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did have yellow stripes in those rainbow. It was the orange and yellow stripes with the navy outline. So.
Yeah, but at the same time, you also have to, like, even in the, like, if you play MLB The Show 2010, like, when you wear the throwback jerseys, even, like, the fake commenters on the game or even comment on how ugly the rainbow jerseys were when they were, like, across the chest.
Especially the ones that had the pants with the numbers, like, on their hip pocket.
Yeah, those are
bad. Those are bad.
Yeah. When they did that back in the late 90s, I think, where Ken Griffey Jr. was wearing his head backwards. And
those were the days. And with the sweater vest or the jersey vests that all the teams used there for a while, those were pretty terrible.
Oh, God. The Pirates and the Reds. Still use them. The Rockies picked those up.
And they're still used a lot in the minor leagues, too.
All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Any listener can email the show at thecrawfishboxes@gmail.com. Did you guys have any last words?
No, I think we're going to be covering more Houston Astros games and whatnot this week. We're 2 weeks away from the draft, so we're not going to kick up that coverage until probably a week from now. But definitely stop back because we are going to be talking about it. And after all, the Crawfish Boxes is your place for all the news and notes on the Astros.
I've got nothing.
I've got something.
All right.
These Houston Rocket uniforms, I'm sorry, are ugly.
What? How can you dislike the Rocket uniforms?
They're ugly. I'm sorry. I like the pinstripes. Give me those pinstripes.
Yeah, the pajamas? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. All right, well, that'll do it. Thanks for listening.